Tonight we're going to finish the story of the Mahabharata. I've been joking that you know the story is over when everyone is dead. But it really is. This is the story of the destruction of the Kshatriya race. So in fact it does end with the whole ending of the entire Dwapara Yuga and the beginning of Kali Yuga. And it's a very sad ending in a certain sense. But it's also very noble and very true. So we'll just stay with it now until we reach the end of the story. And when we left it last week, the Pandavas had finished their 13 years of exile, and they had just revealed themselves to King Virata, and King Virata had accepted them and offered his daughter to Arjuna. Arjuna accepted the bride on behalf of his son, Abhimanyu. So now a council is called. All of the friends of the Pandavas come together, Drupada, Drishtadyumna, the family of the bride of the Pandavas, Draupadi, with King Virata, and Krishna comes, and they have a discussion. And they sort of ask themselves, you know, what now? What do you think is going to happen now? And everyone believes that no matter what appeals they make to Duryodhana, no matter what claims they make that now they've fulfilled their part of the bargain and their half of the kingdom can be returned to them, nobody thinks that war can be averted, except for Balarama, a character that I haven't mentioned a lot, but he plays a sort of an interesting part in the story, is Krishna's brother Balarama, who never quite seems to catch what's going on. He's an odd character because he's a great soul and he's the brother of the Lord, but at the same time he's often just a little confused. Duryodhana is a particular favorite of his. And I can't give you any real explanation of what it's supposed to represent. But Balarama often sort of stands as opposed to everyone. And in this case, too, they have this council meeting. And Drupada plays a big role. He's the king who was the enemy of Drona, who prayed to have the daughter to marry Arjuna and the son who would kill Drona. Drishtadyumna is his son. Drupada is a very powerful king. And he's compassion or calmness. He has some important word. He plays, yes, calm dispassion, Drupada, extreme dispassion. So he plays a very important role in this war against materialism because extreme dispassion is so important, and his son also. So they decide that they're going to send an emissary to the court at Hastinapura to speak on behalf of the Pandavas, to ask them to give them what is owed them. And they decide they will send a Brahmin from Drupada's court. They said it has to be someone who speaks very well, who is unintimidated by kings, who can deliver the message as we would want them to deliver it, and will not back down no matter what is given to them. So they send the Brahmin off to the Kauravas' court, but everyone knows that war is coming, so even as the emissary is on his way, both sides begin to prepare for war. Now, after the council is held, Krishna goes back to his own kingdom of Dwarka, and they're all making these preparations, and it occurs to Arjuna that they need to now get their allies. They begin to visit all the other kings in the area and send messengers and emissaries and invite people to be on their side. And the various kings in the area who know that this war is coming are hastening to offer their services to the side of their choice, lest they get caught out and get invited onto the side they don't want to be a part of. So Arjuna realizes that the first ally he has to obtain and get commitment from is Krishna. Of course, he believes Krishna is with him, but nonetheless, Krishna is the cousin of both sides. And so there's a certain protocol here. If Krishna is approached by Duryodhana, he's also under some obligation. So Arjuna is hastening to Krishna's place, and Duryodhana realizes, of course, that that's exactly what Arjuna is doing. And Duryodhana also gets a very fast chariot and goes rushing off. And as it happens, Duryodhana arrives just before Arjuna, and he says, well, I've gotten here first, and therefore I have priority. And then his Krishna's attendant says, but the Lord is asleep, and so he can't really see either of you. And they say, well, let us go into his bedchamber. We're family. We don't have to wait. So they go into where Krishna is sleeping, and this is Duryodhana and Arjuna now are coming in together. And Arjuna sees Krishna and is so overcome with devotion, he takes a seat at the feet of the Lord and just sits there at his feet and contemplates, forgets his errand, forgets every reason why he's there. He's just caught up in the inner spiritual vibrations of being with Krishna. Duryodhana is a prouder man and less affected by Krishna in this way, and there's a comfortable seat by the head of the bed. So he goes and he sits next to Krishna's head, and they both sit there waiting for Krishna to wake up. Now, when Krishna wakes up, he opens his eyes and he sees first Arjuna sitting there. And then he turns and he sees Duryodhana next to him. And Krishna says, well, why have you come? And they both say, well, we have come, sir, because we want your support. We know this war is inevitable and we want your support. We have equal claim. Each states their claim. You are our cousin. You should support us. And then Duryodhana adds, but I got here first, so I'm the one who gets the first claim on your support. And Krishna is in a bit of a dilemma. And he says, well, it may be, Duryodhana, you say that you got here first, but of course I was asleep and I can't know. And when I woke up, I saw Arjuna first. So it seems in some ways to neutralize the claims that you both made. And he said, nonetheless, he said, it is the tradition that when a choice is to be made, he said, the younger person gets to choose first. He said, so I'm going to make you an offer, he said, and here is the offer. He said, each of you can have support from me, but in different ways. He said, I will offer myself, he said, alone, without any weapons, and I will not take part in the fighting in any way, but I will be on your side. And on the other, I will offer you all my armies, all my soldiers, which are famed throughout the land for their power, for their bravery, for their skill in armaments. You can have all my armies who will fight for you with great heroism, or you can have me, and I will not lift a weapon. And then he says, Arjuna, as the younger, you may choose. And Arjuna says, Lord, there is no choice. Where you are, there is victory. He said, I take you without any reservations. I know that victory is assured because the Lord then will be with us. Duryodhana thinks that Arjuna has made a foolish bargain. He feels it was the most ridiculous possible decision he could have made. And he too feels that he got the better part of the bargain because he got all of Krishna's forces. But of course we know that Duryodhana is doomed. And so also the uncle of Nakula and Sahadev, whose name is Salya, he is the brother of Madri, their mother. And he's on his way to offer his services to the Pandavas. And he represents pride of material possessions, egoic pride, especially pride in what you possess. And so Salya is sort of making a big scene about his journey. He's got all his soldiers with him and he's heading off. And Duryodhana knows that he's heading toward the Pandavas. And Duryodhana cleverly arranges for there to be tents set up, for the army to sleep during the night, and very lavish accommodations for Salya, and wonderful food and entertainments. And Salya is traveling, and as he travels along and he finds these establishments set up for him along the way, he thinks, oh, the Pandavas recognize my great worth, and they're not only accepting me, but they're courting me. He said, what a great soldier I am, and how fortunate I am. Then, of course, when he gets to the last stop, he discovers that it was not, in fact, the Pandavas who have given them this hospitality, but it was Duryodhana. And now he feels compromised because he has accepted this hospitality. He's consumed all these gifts, and Duryodhana naturally asks him of the favor of siding with him. So he's heartsick about what has happened, you see, but his pride has been his downfall because he was so proud in it coming that he never thought to inquire as to who was his host and what was he committing himself to. He just thought he was receiving his due. And thus pride often does us in because it blinds us to more subtle realities. So he's heartsick and he goes to the Pandavas where Krishna is and he tells them about this tragic thing that has happened. But Krishna and the Pandavas agree that the laws of Dharma demand that he must now support the one who has hosted him. But Krishna says, God has inspired this. Because he says, Krishna says, there is one thing I am worried about, and that is when Karna begins to fight with Arjuna. He said, Karna is the equal of Arjuna, and that battle has me frightened. I'm not certain that Arjuna can really overcome him. He said, but it's going to happen, Salya, that you're going to be asked to be the charioteer for Karna, and you must promise me that when you're driving him in that chariot, you will undermine his confidence and in that way help Arjuna. So Salya agrees and makes this promise. So the Brahman from Drupada's court arrives in Hastinapura, and there's Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra and everything. And the Brahman presents a very fair and honest case and describes all that the Pandavas have been through and all that the conditions, and demands simply that the Pandavas ask that their kingdom be returned. Duryodhana says, no, absolutely not. And then the Brahman delivers the rest of the message, and he describes what the war is going to be like, and that they are playing with the destruction of their entire race, and that all of Dhritarashtra's sons are going to be killed. And he reminds them of the terrible vows that were taken in the dice hall when Draupadi was so insulted by Duryodhana and his brothers. And Dhritarashtra becomes very nervous, but Duryodhana absolutely insists that he will not return the kingdom under any circumstances. So then the Brahmin leaves. But Dhritarashtra becomes very frightened because he begins to remember all these images of Bhima promising to drink the blood of the heart of Dushasana and to break his thighs, and Nakula and Sahadev each promised to kill various Shakuni and various of the other ones who abused them. So he sends his own emissary, which is Sanjay, to Yudhishthira. And so in the Yudhishthira's court now comes the emissary from Dhritarashtra, and Sanjay says, delivers the message from Dhritarashtra, trying to plead with Yudhishthira to remain righteous, to not to give in to this adharmic temptation to now go to war. And then Sanjay delivers this message all about the folly of battling for mere material things, and how Yudhishthira's name will be corrupted if he does this awful thing. And so Yudhishthira, who is somewhat prone to listen to these kind of arguments, turns to Krishna and says, Krishna, sir, Lord, what should I do? And all through this story, you have Krishna as the one of the arbiter of Dharma, and what he encourages all the way through is that they fight, and that they fight unto the death. And even as the battle begins, whenever anyone weakens, it's always Krishna who says they must go forward. And we have this as the story itself, that it's Krishna himself telling them, this is your destiny, you must fulfill it. And we also have the symbol of the battle for Kurukshetra being the battle for the consciousness of the individual and the necessity to absolutely show no mercy even to your own qualities if they take away an aspect of your spiritual life. So Krishna says, if they return the territory that's owed to you, then there is no need to go to war. But without that territory, the only righteous action of a Kshatriya is to fight. So Yudhishthira sends a message back to Dhritarashtra's court, and he said, I don't ask even for everything that is mine, but I ask merely for 5 villages. And then he names off 4 villages, and then he says, the last you can choose. So Sanjay carries that message to Dhritarashtra, and when he delivers the message and names the villages, Vidura says, within this very message, Yudhishthira is reminding us of our own wrong actions. And the villages he names are Viranavata, which was the village that they were sent to, the town they were sent to, where the house of lack, the flammable house was built, and the Pandavas were there, and there was an attempt to burn them to death. And then they were sent to Indraprastha, which was the wilderness that they were given as half their kingdom, which then they turned into a beautiful place for themselves. But that was the half of the kingdom that was theirs. And then he names the place where the hall, the gambling hall, was built, and where the fatal dice game took place. And then he names the place where, in their youth, Duryodhana tried to poison Bhima, remember, and threw him into the snake pit. And then Yudhishthira says, the 5th village, you can choose yourselves. You know, of your many iniquities, you can choose any village that you like. Duryodhana is absolutely adamant. Others in the court plead with him to be sensible. See, this man is giving you a way out of this. You're going to your own destruction, but Duryodhana will have none of it. And he makes the statement. He says, I will not return to them so much land as can be covered by the points of 5 needles. And so war is inevitable. Now Krishna decides that he will make an effort, one last effort, to go to Hastinapura and to persuade Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. not to go to war. Krishna gives many reasons for this. He says, I know that my errand is doomed, but I don't want the world to say that I didn't try. He said, no one goes willingly to war and I must stand up. Also, you have this picture, which is a very true picture, was that the Lord always gives you one more chance. In the story of the Ramayana, it's very interesting because three or four different times, the villain in that story, the Lord comes to him in various forms and says, are you sure you want to do this? And then when ignorance will simply not listen to wisdom, then ignorance gets its day. So Krishna goes to Hastinapura. Now Dhritarashtra imagines they have this council in their chambers and everyone is there. And Dhritarashtra says, perhaps we can give him so many lavish gifts that he will feel obligated to support our side. And Karna just speaks against this as ridiculous. He said, we are kshatriyas, we must fight. Duryodhana says, I know there's no need to bribe him with gifts. Krishna is unbribable. But what we can do is we will bind him up and take him hostage and we will hold him hostage. And Vidura speaks and says, it's folly. This is the Lord you're talking about. You think you can bind him up? And again, Karna says, why do we resort to trickery? We can go to the war. And then Karna speaks of its great power and how he can win the war. So Duryodhana makes ready for Krishna to come. And he prepares a wonderful palace for him and everything that he needs. And Krishna comes into the town and all the townspeople go out. And Duryodhana tries to escort him to the place that Duryodhana has prepared. And Krishna says, I will not take hospitality from an unrighteous man. And he absolutely refuses to go where Duryodhana has prepared for him, and instead he goes and stays with Vidura, the only righteous man left there. So Duryodhana now is already very angry at Krishna, and Krishna comes to the hall where they're all gathered, and Krishna gives a speech, and he says, there's three kinds of people. Those people who are naturally righteous, and those people who look out for themselves and are always trying to make a profit for themselves, and those who prefer evil. And Krishna looks at Duryodhana. He says, I hope, Duryodhana, that you are not the third kind of person, but even if you're the second kind of person who is merely looking out for your own profit, this war will not profit you. You cannot win against the Pandavas. Well, Duryodhana is so outraged by the insults that Krishna has given him, refusing to take his hospitality, calling him an unrighteous man, that he just walks out and won't listen anymore. And Krishna, while Duryodhana is gone, says to Dhritarashtra, he says, you must bind up your son, bind up Karna, bind up Shakuni, take them prisoner and deliver them to Yudhishthira, and yet you let Yudhishthira dispose with them as he will. That is the only way you can save the Kshatriya race. But of course, Dhritarashtra, he will not be persuaded. And they say, bring in Gandhari, bring Duryodhana's mother, the righteous mother who's been wearing this blindfold all the time. Let her plead with her son to spare his life. And so she's brought in, and Duryodhana is very reluctantly brought back into the hall. And Gandhari again tries to plead with him. You know, the prayers of a righteous mother, my son, you're throwing your life away and the lives of your brothers. But Duryodhana is absolutely adamant. And then Duryodhana gives the signal and he wants them to move in and to capture Krishna. And Krishna begins to expand his consciousness. And in front of everyone, suddenly everyone begins to perceive that this is no ordinary man who's standing in front of them, but an incarnation of the Infinite Spirit. And even Dhritarashtra, who has been blind his whole life, can see the blazing light of Krishna standing and rising before him. And of course, everyone is immobilized. No one can lay a hand on him. And then Krishna shrinks to his natural form and walks unmolested out of the hall. And Dhritarashtra says, oh, after seeing the form of Krishna, I don't want to see anymore. I want to be blind again. But before he leaves Hastinapura, Krishna goes and he visits with Kunti and he comforts her and he speaks to her of the great suffering that's going to come, but he reassures her that her sons are great soldiers, but the conflict is inevitable and many people will die. And he encourages her in what he calls the dharma of a kshatriya mother, which is such a mother gives birth to her sons that they may fight righteously and oftentimes die. But she mustn't mourn that. That is the duty that she's been given. It's a beautiful image, you know, because many times in our lives, we think that we give birth to many things for the sake of the satisfaction it will give us. And he reminds her that you give birth to sons in this case, or whatever it may be, for the righteous life that they can lead, and their death is not within our control. So, now Krishna is just about to leave the town and go back to where the Pandavas are. And he makes one last effort. He goes to Karna, and he finds Karna. And he says, Karna, come with me. Get into my chariot. Let us take a ride together. Now Karna knows he's loyal to Duryodhana. Duryodhana is the only one who's ever respected him and taken care of him, and he has this love for him. But he knows who Krishna is, so he gets in Krishna's chariot, and they go out away from the town, and then they disembark from the chariot, and Krishna takes Karna's hands, and they walk together for a time. Krishna says, you're a good man. You're a brave man. You're an honorable man. Why have you aligned yourself with this sinful man, Duryodhana? Now Karna says, when no one would accept me, when everyone mocked me, he said, Duryodhana gave me friendship. He said, certainly you remember that tournament where I came and they didn't even want me to compete because they said I was of lowly birth. Who alone stood by me and recognized my worth but Duryodhana? And every day since then, he said, Duryodhana has been my loyal friend. He said, I know that he is not always a righteous man, but I owe him a debt of gratitude. And I do not feel that I can judge him. He said, I love him simply as a brother. He said, I don't see him as others see him. And now, after all this time, even if he goes into this war, I must go with him. He said, two people in my life have loved me, my mother Radha and my brother Duryodhana. To please them is what my life is for. And Krishna says, your mother? Who is your mother? And Karna says, some high-born princess who loved her reputation more than she loved me. He says, my mother, Radha, told me that she found me wrapped in expensive cloths in a basket in the river. Clearly, I was set adrift by some maiden who didn't care enough about me to raise me, but just let me go. But he said, I have been given by God a wonderful mother, and I will always be proud to carry her name, because he calls himself Radeha after his mother. Krishna says, your true mother is the mother of five great heroic sons, the personification of Dharma, the greatest heroes of the age. And then Krishna goes, she is a high-born princess, even as you say, and a noble woman who made a noble marriage afterwards, after your birth. And Karna realizes that she must be talking about the Pandavas. And he says, who can you be speaking of? Are you telling me that my mother is the mother of those five great heroes? And then Karna says, then who is my father? And Krishna says, the Lord whom you worship, the god Surya. Because Karna has always been a devotee of Surya, he does his worship every day at noon. He said, you were born to that woman when she was just a child, before she married Pandu. And then Krishna reminds Karna that the law of the land is that a child born to a maiden before she is married becomes the son of the man she marries. And Karna says, you mean I am the eldest of the Pandavas? And Krishna says, yes. And if you went to Yudhishthira and you told him this truth, he would lay the kingdom at your feet. He's an utterly righteous man. He said, the great Arjuna and Bhima and Nakula and Sahadev would be your brothers. Draupadi would be your wife. Without you, Duryodhana would never succeed, and therefore the kingdom would be yours to rule. Karna says, you tempt me to betray my friend with the promise of wealth and friendship. Everything I desire you offer to me, he said, but the cost would be to behave in a way that would destroy my good name for all time. Krishna, I cannot do it. And then he says also, he said, ah, Krishna, the one joy I had, the one thing I was looking forward to was battling the Pandavas, and especially to kill Arjuna. And now in your love for him, you have taken that joy away from me. And you have weakened my resolve. I see what you are doing. Krishna honors Karna for the nobility of his choice and blesses him. He said, your cause is doomed, but your righteous name will live forever. Meanwhile, and then Krishna goes and Karna goes back to his fate. Meanwhile, Vidura, who has been talking to Krishna when he came to Hastinapura, knows again also about this terrible war that's coming, and he's talking with Kunti about how difficult it was going to be. And Kunti makes a desperate decision. And she goes to where Karna is now worshipping Surya because it's noon. And she knows, as everyone in the land knows, that after his worship, whoever asks a favor of him, he's made a solemn vow he will always give it. So he's there doing his worship, and she comes and stands behind him, and the sun is so bright, she picks up his cloth and covers her head with it a little because she can't stand the sun. And he finishes his worship, and he turns, and he sees this person behind him, because people often come to him after his worship, and he can't quite see her face. And he says, "Excuse me, who are you? Have you come to ask me for a boon?" He says, "You seem very familiar to me." And then all of a sudden he says, "I recognize you. You are the woman who has come to me in my dreams." And so he tells Kunti of this recurring dream that he had for so long, especially in his early life, of this woman who would come in front of him, whose face was slightly covered by a veil, and she would just stand over him and her tears would fall on him when he was a child. And he said, "I can only feel that you are my mother. That woman of my dreams was my mother." And she said, "Yes, I am your mother." And he says, "I know why you have come." He said, "But before we speak of that, let us just sit together for a moment." And so she sits and he puts his head in her lap. And they just sit together silently for a period of time, and her tears are falling on his face and his tears are falling on her leg. And then after a while, he said, whether it's minutes or hours, I don't know. Karna says to her, "I want so much to be angry with you. Why did you abandon me? Why did you give me away?" He said, "But all I can feel now that you're with me is the great love of a mother for her son and of a son for her mother." So then Karna realizes that this happiness is not meant to be his. He knows that fate is against him. So he sits up and he says, "I know you came for a purpose. What boon do you seek?" And she says, "I am the mother of the Pandavas." And he says, "I know." She says, "How do you know?" He says, "Krishna told me." She says, "Then by all means, my son, be reunited with your brothers. Be reunited with me. Yudhisthira will give you the kingdom. There's no question about it." In his heart, Karna feels his father, the sun god, speaking to him, saying, "My son, by all means, save yourself, accept what your mother is asking you." Kunti pleads with him, and she quotes the scriptures that say, "In a perplexing situation, you should please your parents." But Karna says, "I can't grant you what you ask." And Kunti is devastated, and she's beginning to take her leave, but Karna says, stops her. He says, "But I have promised to grant a boon to whoever asks me, so I will tell you this." He said, "I will only kill Arjuna," he said, "or Arjuna will kill me. So at the end of this war, you will still be the mother of 5 sons." So, now we come to the battlefield. And both sides are arrayed for battle, and Bhishma, the ego, is chosen to be the commander of the forces for Duryodhana. The materialistic forces require that the ego be engaged and be in charge. So Bhishma is the great power, and he tells Duryodhana that even though he believes that Duryodhana's cause is both lost and unrighteous, nonetheless he is honor bound to fight for his house, and he will fight with full power. But Bhishma says, "I will not kill the Pandavas because they are like sons to me." He said, "I will do battle with everyone," he said, "but I will not injure them in any way." Of course, the ego can't injure the spiritual power. It can battle with it, but it doesn't have the power to injure it. So Bhishma's promise was also a statement. He can stand up to them. He can resist them. He can thwart them, but he can't destroy them. And also Bhishma says, I don't like Karna. He said he's a braggart, and he's always criticizing me. He's never been a supporter of mine, and either he or I are in this war, but not both of us. And so Karna, hearing of this, says, I will not join the battle until Bhishma has fallen. Then when he does, I will enter in and I will kill Arjuna at that point. And Duryodhana has no choice. He has to agree. So Duryodhana tells his men, at all costs, you must protect Bhishma. Because unless we have the ego strong and intact and guiding the show here, we were all lost. But he just knows that he doesn't say it like that, but he says, the grandfather, the commander-in-chief, we must protect him. And then the two sides get together and the rules of warfare are described, bearing in mind this is still Dwapara Yuga. This is the end of Dwapara Yuga, and by the end of the 18 days of battle, Dwapara Yuga is over. But when they begin, it's still Dwapara Yuga, and war is fought in a very righteous and a specific way. They never fight after dark. Once the sun goes down, the battle is over for the day. The single combat can only be engaged in among equals. One who is much too strong cannot challenge another, because once a kshatriya is challenged, he has to fight. And so one who is much too strong can't take advantage of a weak one's honor by challenging him to fight when he knows he'll lose. Those who have turned away from the battle and for the moment have put their weapons down and have walked away cannot be attacked, because that would be unrighteous to take advantage of their lack of attention. It has to be horses to horses and foot soldiers to foot soldiers and elephants to elephants. In other words, everything has to be fair. Anyone who has surrendered must be accepted and kept safe. And one who has disengaged even temporarily from the battle and is not directing his weapons toward anyone can also not be attacked. You can't slay those who are unarmed, who are retreating, who have lost their armor, and you can't attack those who are non-combatants. So this was all the rules. They all agree. And then they line up and they survey one another, and there's a great deal of blowing of conches and twanging of archery's bowstrings. That's the word I'm looking for. All of which, in a more complete explanation, all represent sounds of the chakras and the strength of the spine and the inner movement of energy as the two forces line up. Now everything is just ready and the battle is just about to begin, and suddenly Yudhishthira dismounts from his chariot and begins to remove all of the armor that he's wearing. He takes his weapons, he sets them to the ground, and he starts walking to the other side. Krishna, Arjuna, Bhima, Sahadeva, Nakula see him doing this. They think, oh my God, here at the last moment, Yudhishthira is just going to crumble. You know, his resolution to do this fight is so weak, it's just about over, and they become very upset, but they also put down their weapons and run after him. And he just marches determinedly, and he marches right through the Kaurava lines, right through the army lines, and he goes to the feet of Bhishma, and he bows at his feet. He says, you are my elder, you are my grandfather, you raised me as a father. He said, I am now going to go to war against you, but I cannot enter into this battle without your permission. Bless me, grandfather, and then the war will begin. And then Bhishma blesses him, and then he goes to others of the elders there, Drona and Kripa and others who have trained him. And he bows to all of them and asks for the blessings of the elders before he begins the enterprise. Then he goes back and dons his armor, and they begin. The battle lasts for 18 days. For the first 10 days, Bhishma is in command. And then he falls on the field of battle, as we describe, although he doesn't die until the war is over, but he withdraws from the fray. He becomes incapacitated. Drona then takes over for 5 days, and then Drona falls. And then Karna has 2 days of battle, and then Salya leads it for 1 day, and then the war is over. Before the battle actually begins, however, in fact, even before Yudhishthira went to the elders for their blessings, Arjuna also makes a strange request, and he says to Krishna, he said, I see all these combatants arranged in front of me, but I wish to withdraw from this field for a moment. And Arjuna has Krishna drive his chariot off from the field of battle, and then Arjuna speaks to Krishna, and he says to him, I look out, I look on this field, and on both sides I see those who are so dear to my heart, my cousins with whom I was raised, the elders who blessed me, those who trained me. And then Arjuna says, I do not want to fight this war. He said, what would it serve me to win a victory if victory comes at the expense of killing all these who are dear to me? What worth would a kingdom be to me without the presence of all these dear and devoted ones with whom I have spent my entire life? And then Krishna's answer and their dialogue is the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita takes place right at that point when, after all this time and all this effort and all this commitment to righteousness that has finally been driven to this fight, and it has to be a fight into the death, and everyone is depending on Arjuna. Arjuna is the most powerful hero. He's the one who can stand up to the great heroes on the other side. And then Arjuna says, Krishna, I don't want to fight. And Krishna answers him in so many words more poetically than this. Krishna says, you are using words that wise people use to cover the actions, the thoughts, and the feelings of a coward. If you do not do battle now, your name will be smeared, and you will be despised, and you will be mocked and humiliated. For as long as people remember that you ever lived, that will be how they will regard you. And Arjuna, of course, is taken aback because he thinks he's really finally come to his senses. And he says, well, Lord, then instruct me. And then Krishna gives the long dissertation, as I was saying, that is the Bhagavad Gita, that's all about right action and dharma and righteousness and the necessity to do battle with evil and the need even to sacrifice your life or to take the life of evil people or evil qualities. And many of the famous questions that Arjuna asked to Krishna are all answered in there. Krishna, Arjuna asks, but we what happens when we kill? We end the life of these other souls. And Krishna says, you see that they die. He said, I see that they go on. You see their bodies fall. I see their souls rise. And so many of the principles that guide our whole understanding of self-realization are all at that time. But what makes it especially interesting is just understanding the context, understanding why Arjuna's refusal to engage in the battle at that point was such a wrong decision. And you sort of see it all by itself. Arjuna says, why do I have to fight like this? And Krishna says, you coward. And so we have to understand as devotees that, Yudhishthira did everything he could to be righteous, but when it finally came to it, he had no choice. He had to go forward. And the Lord himself pushed him at that point. This is what you must do. And so we mustn't treasure the small things of our lives too much. Remember at the very beginning of this story, I quoted to you from Reverend Wurmbrand's wife, Sabina, when she was in communist Romania, and Christ was being insulted by all these ministers who were afraid to stand up to the communist authorities, and she turned to her husband and she said, someone must remove the stain from the face of Christ. And he said to her, if I speak, you have no husband, meaning I will be arrested and killed. She said, if you do not speak, I have no husband. So this is the issue that Krishna and Arjuna are facing. It's a very powerful issue. And they go forward, and they do lose everything. It's mayhem. But what matter does it? What difference does it make? And all through the days of battle, they're grieving and upset because those are dying. People are dying, and Krishna is always saying, what is there to grieve about? Yes, it's true that their life as you knew it has ended, but they've gone on. They've lived righteously. What is there to grieve about? And he's also talking about the loss of all our own little treasured things, our little comforts, our little preferences, our little desires. It's not just our lives. Sometimes your life is easier to lose. It's when all the little things that we surround ourselves with get taken away, even our little mental attitudes. That's what he's talking about. So now, the battle begins. On the first day of battle, there's many individual battles, and all through this story, and I can't and won't go into detail of everybody who fights everybody. Some of it is significant, but it's way too much. The first day does not go well for the Pandavas. Duryodhana's forces just seem to have more energy and more power. They're more committed to this. they fall more naturally into this battle. Yudhisthira and his brothers are still a little hesitant. Arjuna's son, though, Abhimanyu, proves himself to be an extremely powerful warrior. He has all the strength and courage of his father, plus the power of youth, and he does great damage in the Kaurava armies to Duryodhana's forces. And he's less troubled. He didn't grow up with them. They're not his cousins. And he's able just to go forward. Abhimanyu is the power of self-mastery. And the power of self-mastery gives victory over the forces of material desire. And he is so much the master of himself that he's able to wreak great havoc on the armies. But still, Drona is so strong and Bhishma is so strong. And whenever they confront the Pandavas, any of the Pandava warriors, especially the brothers, I mean, they become somewhat hesitant, you know, to fight with full energy, because these are their elders, the ones they have revered and worshipped and who have taught them all their lives. So in the evening, the Pandavas are somewhat downcast, and Duryodhana is jubilant. The first day has gone well. We will end this conflict. The kingdom will be ours. So the second day of battle begins. And Krishna takes Arjuna over to fight with Bhishma. Krishna is urging Arjuna along. You must attack Bhishma. You must fight with him. So this great battle begins, and the more Arjuna fights against Bhishma, the more Bhishma smiles and is just delighted to see what a powerful warrior you have become. My son, I'm so proud to see you. But Bhishma also fights back with unrelenting force. He's not going to let Arjuna take his life. And all the gods stand around to watch, because there's only a few people who can stand up to Krishna. To Arjuna. Krishna, Bhishma, Drona, and Karna are the only ones who are as strong as Arjuna is. Drishtadyumna, who was born, remember, to kill Drona. His father prayed for a son who was powerful enough to kill Drona after Drona insulted him so much. Drishtadyumna tries to carry out his fate to kill Drona, but Drona is simply too strong. Drishtadyumna is extreme dispassion. Drona represents the power of habit, of samskars. Extreme dispassion can eventually kill your past habits, but your habits are very strong. And the first day of the battle, Drona wins against Drishtadyumna. The Pandavas, however, overall take the day, and that night Duryodhana is despondent and the Pandavas are jubilant. The next day, Bhima's son, Ghatachaka, remember him? He was born, he was half Rakshasa. He was born to that Rakshasa woman who loved him. And so they have this son. And Ghatachaka is an enormously powerful warrior because he's Bhima's son and he's half Rakshasa. So he has this magic power that he can use. And Bhima goes to fight with Duryodhana, but Duryodhana is knocked unconscious and is taken away from the field, so Bhima doesn't have a chance. But he rallies and comes back to fight, and Duryodhana comes back to fight, and he starts taking out his anger on Bhishma. Why aren't you being stronger against the Pandavas? You've always favored them. You've never loved me. You said you would fight for me, but you're not really fighting for me. And this Bhishma becomes very disturbed. He said, I told you honestly what I felt. I told you no one could beat the Pandavas, but I will give my all. And so Bhishma becomes so powerful, he just begins to plow through the Pandava army. And Krishna says to Arjuna, you must kill him. Now is the time. And so Krishna takes the chariot over in front of Bhishma and forces Arjuna to begin to fight with Bhishma. But still, Arjuna is just not able to give it his real power. His heart is not in it. Finally, Krishna says, I've had it with your half-hearted efforts. He said, I have sworn not to fight, but I cannot see this go on. So Krishna gets out of the chariot and he has his weapon, which is the chakra, which is this wheel. And he has it in his hands and he's going to kill Bhishma. And Bhishma puts down his weapons and he said, oh Lord, I am so tired of my life. What greater blessing can there be for you to take my life from me? Come, Krishna, come. And Arjuna jumps out of the chariot and says, oh Krishna, don't break your vow on account of my cowardice. I will be strong. I will do it. And Arjuna persuades Krishna to get back into the chariot. And Arjuna fights as strongly as he can, but Bhishma still can't be defeated. But still, the day ends with the Pandavas being happy. Then the fourth day, Bhima begins to keep his vow and he starts killing Duryodhana's brothers. There's 101 brothers, so this is rather a big project. And they begin to sort of come to him. And Ghatakocha is fighting also and does a great deal of damage. And that night, Duryodhana again goes into the tent of his grandfather and bewails his fate and berates his grandfather and accuses his grandfather of partiality. You know, Duryodhana has this mind, this that you see in people who are ego-driven and materialistic-driven. They're never fair. They're never honest. They never quite see it like it is. And Duryodhana just represents that. I mean, you see people like this, and sometimes we are those people in our own lives, where we just, no matter what happens, we just keep complaining, why isn't it coming out my way? And Duryodhana doesn't understand that it's his own attachment, his own desires, that dooms him. But nonetheless, he still has this great sense of, why isn't the world treating me the way it ought to treat me? And so he complains to his grandfather, and the ego tries to comfort him and tries to promise and tries to say, we'll do it better. The next day, the fifth day, Bhima kills more of Duryodhana's brothers. He fights with Duryodhana and almost takes his life, but Duryodhana gets away. Drishtadyumna tries to fight with Drona, but not quite. But when darkness falls, anger has begun. And the battle has become so personal that the dharma of a kshatriya is forgotten, and they begin to fight even after the sun has gone down. And this says, you know, once violence starts, dharma begins to wane. So this is the beginning of the breakdown of the honor that has always held them all. The sixth and seventh day are very much the same. Bhima keeps killing Duryodhana's brothers. Abhimanyu fights like a hero. He's a hero every day. He defeats many of Duryodhana's brothers, but he refuses to kill them, even though he can, because his uncle has promised to do that. And so Abhimanyu just humiliates them and takes their weapons and says, I leave you, though, for Bhima to kill. Bhishma attacks Abhimanyu, and Bhishma is so powerful, but Abhimanyu has the strength to hold him off. And finally, the five Pandava brothers come to rescue Arjuna's son, and Bhishma is powerful enough to hold all five of the Pandavas at bay. No one can stand up to them except the power of ego who spawned them all. Okay. On the eighth day, Ghatachoka again begins to become a terrible force, and he begins to kill more and more of the Kaurava soldiers, and Bhima continues to kill Duryodhana's brothers. And on the ninth day, Duryodhana again is raging at Bhishma, and Bhishma goes with even greater power, and Krishna sees again that Bhishma is such a force against good, and Krishna once again takes the chariot in front of Bhishma, and Arjuna fights, but not with his whole heart, and once again Krishna says, you're not going to do it, I am going to do it, and once again Krishna steps out of the chariot, and Bhishma welcomes death at the hand of the Lord, but Arjuna persuades him to come back in and give me a chance. That evening, Krishna and the Pandavas realize that this with Bhishma can't go on, that something has to change. So the five Pandavas sneak into the Kaurava camp. They sneak into the camp of the enemy and they go to Bhishma's tent and they say, Grandfather, how can we kill you? You must give us permission to kill you and you must tell us how. And he says, only Arjuna can slay me. Only the power of self-control exercised by Arjuna, the power of will representing the third chakra, that's what can slay the ego. He said, Shikhandi, remember Shikhandi? Shikhandin. She was the one who was born a woman. She was Amba. She was the one who was disgraced because Bhishma took her to be the bride when she was in fact in love with someone else, and then that man wouldn't take her, and Bhishma wouldn't take her, and the son wouldn't take her, and she swore that she would be the death of Bhishma, so she threw herself into the fire and was born again as a woman who changed into a man to be the death of Bhishma. Bhishma says, Shikhandin, he said, use Shikhandin as a shield. He said, I see her as a woman. She hates me, but she also loves me because she is going to be the instrument of my liberation from this life. He said, so use her as a shield, he says to Arjuna, and Arjuna, then you may slay me. So on the 10th day of the war, finally Arjuna has agreed, and with the permission of his grandfather, he's ready. So Arjuna is moving behind Shikhandin, and Shikhandin is shooting at Bhishma, but doesn't matter how much she shoots, Bhishma refuses to take up weapons against Shikhandin. He considers her a woman, and it would be cowardly to fight a woman. And then Arjuna begins to shoot. And with each arrow that pierces him, Bhishma speaks in poetic terms about the joy of being pierced by Arjuna's arrows. Because after all this long saga of his life, that he promised his mother he would carry out this saga, and he forswore all the marriage and the pleasures of life, and he over and over again had to pick up the burdens of this kingdom, finally it's ending. Arjuna has finally gotten the strength to end his life. And finally, Bhishma is so covered with arrows that he steps down from his chariot to pick up something to hurl at Arjuna, but he's so overcome that he falls. But he's so filled with arrows, he doesn't hit the ground. He just falls on this bed of arrows. And all over the battlefield, everything stops because Bhishma has fallen. And they all gather around, and Bhishma says, I need something to support my head. And Duryodhana runs to get a pillow, and Bhishma looks at him, and he said, no, he said, ask Arjuna. And Arjuna shoots 3 arrows, and they make a little triangle, and they support his head. And then Bhishma says, I am thirsty. And so Arjuna shoots an arrow into the ground, and the river Ganges, his mother, comes up and pours sweet water into his mouth. And then Bhishma says, this is not an auspicious time to die. I must wait until the sun reverses its course and is going in another direction. He makes some reference to the heavenly realms. And he says, so I'm going to just lay here on this bed of arrows until that time. And then when my appointed day comes, any of you who are still alive may come and see me. And so now that Bhishma has fallen, and he turns to Duryodhana, Bhishma says, he says, even now, Duryodhana, it is not too late. You can save yourself and your household by making peace with Yudhishthira. But Duryodhana will have none of it. And so now the battle is over for the day. Bhishma has fallen. And Karna goes out to the battlefield where Bhishma is lying on his bed of nails, and he says, he asks for Bhishma's blessing. He says, now, my lord, you have fallen, and I have said that now I will enter the battle because you have gone. Bhishma says, you are a Pandava. You are the son of Kunti. He says, forsake Duryodhana and join with your brothers, and this war can end. And Karna says, I know that. Bhishma says, how could you know? Because Vidura had told Bhishma. He said, Krishna told me before the war began. And Bhishma says, you are a great man. The righteousness of your nature will live long beside this. Your cause is doomed, he said, but you have my blessing. And so then Karna goes for the next day of the war. I wanted to share a few things that we were discussing during the break. There's some interesting features here just to understand. Because this was a higher age, a lot of the combat was single combat. Somebody asked me that question when Bhishma was fighting with Arjuna. Those were the rules of combat that we laid out. One fights another. And when you wish to withdraw, perhaps you see that you're going to be beaten or your weapons have been taken away from you. It just seems so common to us now that once it becomes uneven, you just take advantage of that unevenness. If you're fighting to the death and not giving up, then you have the right to kill your opponent. But if your opponent essentially tries to withdraw from the fight, a dharma of that time said that you couldn't do it. You couldn't continue to fight. You had to honor their desire to withdraw. As you'll see in the later days of the war, that is not always honored once darkness begins to take over. And also, it's very interesting, the whole character of Bhishma, because you see that the ego is a very multifaceted character. It's not, clearly a bad thing to have an ego. The ego is essential. The way Master teaches it, the ego is also that quality in us which enables us to be free. Because if we didn't have an ego, we wouldn't have any motivation. It's what understands and motivates us also to engage in the battle. And even though it may struggle against its own demise, it also will willingly and joyfully give up its life when it realizes that the Lord is going to take over. So these several scenes where Bhishma is so willing to let Krishna take over is the wise ego recognizing that whatever happiness I've had here, it's nothing compared to the happiness I would have if I gave up. And so we see this sort of scene acted out again and again. Okay. Any other questions or comments? Okay, now we are up to the 11th day of battle. Bhishma, the ego, has fallen and Drona takes over. Drona represents past habit. So now the ego is incapacitated, so what keeps the war going is past habit, right? And so oftentimes our own, you know, sort of ego is not functioning anymore, but we just keep going with past habit. He becomes the commander-in-chief of the battle. Stephanie, did you have a question?
Well, I guess with that impression, Karna was going to become the commander after Bhishma fell, and it's Drona instead.
No, he's not the commander. He's just going to join the battle.
Oh, right.
Karna hasn't even been in the battle until now. No, Drona is still second to Bhishma. Karna is not an elder. He's equal to Duryodhana. He eventually becomes the only hero, the strongest hero left. But at this point, habit takes over from ego. And also, just a little bit about Karna, I just wanted to comment again. Karna is such a touching character because Karna's quality, as it described, is the desire to find happiness in this world. And so he's a great character, but he's fatally flawed because that desire is a fatal flaw in a person. You can have all these wonderful attributes, but still, there's always going to be something that's not going to quite work out. But also, he has great nobility because he is a great hero. The desire to be happy in this world is also one of the Pandavas. In other words, the desire for happiness is one of the Pandavas because it's a quality, it's a divine quality. It's just slightly misplaced in Karna. He was born to divine bliss, but he got a little confused and went over to this side. But also, his renunciation of his role as one of the Pandavas is all the more touching because what he deeply desires above all things is to be happy in this world. And when Krishna offers him everything he desires, you know, the love of his mother, the honor of his brothers, the kingdom, everything that he desires, and yet still he won't betray his friend for it. And you see that quality. He repudiates that which he desires the most because to do so would be to betray his friend. And that's why he's one of the most heroic characters in the whole epic, even though he fights on the wrong side. Because when faced with all of these difficult choices, he remains strong in Dharma. And he's a tremendous inspiration when you think about it. When we ourselves feel tempted, you think of Karna and you think, well, he was able to resist. He was loyal. He didn't just say, oh, I want that. How often these days people just say, oh, but it's better for you, so you should take it. You know, looking out for number one. I often tell the story of when Danny Levin was at a book fair and we had an exclusive contract with one distributor and then were offered an extremely lucrative contract with another distributor. And he wasn't sure for a little bit what to do and he was asking people's advice. And what they all asked him was, how much money will you make? And when he realized what they were asking him was, is the price high enough for you to break your word to the first distributor, he said, no, there's no price that's high enough to cause me to be disloyal to people who've been loyal to us. And he just went forward. But everybody just asked the question, well, how much will you get? If it's enough, then obvious disloyalty is what you should do. But you have the example of Karna, who had everything offered to him by Krishna. He said, no. It's a great power to contemplate. So now, Drona has replaced Bhishma as the commander-in-chief. And Duryodhana and Karna and Dusasana come up with this plan which they present to Drona. And the plan is, why don't we capture Yudhishthira alive? And Drona at first thinks that maybe Duryodhana has some sense and he understands and he has some new plan that is not as malicious. But then Duryodhana goes on to explain it. He says, first of all, he said, if we killed Yudhishthira, which you, Drona, have the power to do, if you killed him, which is past habit can overcome the calmness in psychological battle. If you do to kill him, it will just inflame the Pandavas. But if you capture him and bring him to us, we will persuade him to have another dice game. And then Shakuni can win. And even at this last hour, we can do it. Okay, Drona thinks that this is a terrible plan. But nonetheless, he prefers it to having to do battle unto the death with Yudhishthira. So he agrees. And he tries valiantly all day long to capture Yudhishthira. But the Pandavas, of course, have spies in the Kaurava camp, and the Kauravas have spies in the Pandava camp. So they know that Drona is out to get Yudhishthira, and everybody protects Yudhishthira, and Arjuna is able to keep Drona at bay the whole day. Then the 12th day comes, and the Kauravas have a plan, which is there's this fierce band of soldiers, and they're going to keep Arjuna engaged. They're a suicide squad, and they're just going to challenge Arjuna to battle all day. And because he's a kshatriya, he can't refuse. They will just keep challenging him and challenging him. And in that way, Yudhishthira will be not so well protected. And then Drona will be able to capture him. But Arjuna is drawn off. But Satyaki and other great heroes stick with Yudhishthira all day. And Drona almost succeeds, but not quite. And then finally we come to the 13th day. And again, this band of suicide soldiers takes Arjuna off to a far corner of the battlefield and just keeps him over there. This is all part of the plan to weaken the Pandava side so that Drona can get to Yudhishthira. And Drona sets up his army, and every day they describe in the story these elaborate ways in which the army is set up. And it's described as if it were physical, but it's also mantras and powers that makes the armies invincible in certain ways. So Drona, of course, who's the master of all these military arts, he sets his army up in such a complex form that no one can penetrate it. And the Kaurava army is just beginning to kill its way through the Pandava army. Now Arjuna is way on the other side of the field, and Arjuna is the only one among them who knows how to deal with this particular formation, how to break it, how to get inside of it, and then also how not to get trapped and get out. But the Drona and the Kaurava army are doing such damage to the Pandavas that finally Yudhishthira speaks to Abhimanyu, who is the son of Arjuna, and he says, "Do you know how to break this formation?" And Abhimanyu says, "Yes, my father has taught me how to break into it," he said, "but my great concern is that he hasn't yet taught me how to get out of it." Mm-hmm. And Yudhishthira and the other brothers say, especially Yudhishthira, "Have no fear. We will be right behind you. If you can break into it, we will follow behind you and we will protect you and we will destroy the army and there will be no danger." So Abhimanyu is a great hero and he's more than happy to take on this extraordinary challenge, and he goes forward and he follows what Arjuna has taught him, and with his power he breaks in. And he's just going in and the others are behind him when this one fierce warrior named Jayadratha is his name. And he comes between Abhimanyu and his uncles, the four uncles, because Arjuna is away. And Jayadratha has received a boon. And that boon is that he will have the power to stand up to four of the Pandavas, the four without Arjuna, for one day. And this is the day he chooses to take it in. So Abhimanyu is going fiercely into the ranks of the enemy, killing left and right, and no one can stand in front of him. And he looks behind him, and he sees that Yudhishthira and his brother, his uncles, are not with him, but that this other warrior has come between them. But still, with this exquisite and courageous smile on his face, he looks back at his uncles, and then he goes forward. Now, Abhimanyu is so powerful that he just begins all by himself, and now, but he's trapped behind the enemy lines, and no one is able to get into him, hard as they try. Arjuna is over here with these soldiers in another part of the field who keep him engaged. Yudhishthira and the others are vainly fighting against this powerful warrior who's well known for his power and also has this unique one day of force. And Abhimanyu, meanwhile, is just wreaking havoc inside the Kaurava armies, even though he's all by himself and he's killing and killing and nobody can stand up to him. He's like a god. He has such force. And finally, Duryodhana and Drona and Karna and Kripa all individually try to beat him and they can't beat him. And finally, Duryodhana declares that something must be done. And all of those warriors begin to surround Abhimanyu. And against all the rules of Dharma and honor, they begin to fight with him, all of them from all sides, because they realize he can't be stopped. And little by little, they whittle him down and they take away his weapons and they begin to wound him. And finally, someone cuts his bowstring from the back and somebody hits him with an arrow with the front and somebody strikes him with a mace. And then his chariot is smashed and he's on the ground and he's picking up his chariot wheel and he's going to fight with the wheel of his carriage. And somebody hits him with one of those warriors hits him with a weapon and he falls. Now this is one of the most despicable acts that happens in the whole war, is that all of these warriors gang up on Abhimanyu because it's the only way he could be killed. And suddenly there's this great cry of joy from the Kaurava forces, and Yudhishthira and Bhima and the others see that Abhimanyu has been killed. And they were able to see also how despicably he was killed. And Yudhishthira remembers that last look on his face as he went in, and that was the last time he saw his face. And Yudhishthira is just totally overcome with guilt and remorse because he was the one who promised him. And this strange and deathly silence settles over the Pandava camp because Arjuna is still away. He doesn't even know this has happened. And Arjuna, from his triumphant day, he starts coming back and Krishna comes back. And Arjuna says, "What is this strange silence?" He said, "Why does our camp seem so deathlike and still? Where is my son, Abhimanyu? He always greets me at the end of the day." And then Arjuna begins to think, and he says, "Drona arranged his army in this particular formation. Surely they did not send Abhimanyu into that. He knew how to come in, but he didn't know how to get out. They couldn't have sent that child in." And finally he comes to the camp, and he sees the face of Yudhishthira, and Yudhishthira says, "It was I who killed him. I alone bear the blame. Your son is gone." And Arjuna just faints dead away with grief over this. And then gradually he says, "Tell me how this happened." And they tell the story of how Yudhishthira says, "We were following him in, we were right behind him, and Jayadratha came and stopped us from getting in." And after Arjuna recovers himself, he says, "I will take a vow." He says, "He who caused the death of Abhimanyu was Jayadratha, who stopped you from following him in." He says, "I take an oath that before the sun sets tomorrow, I will kill Jayadratha, or I myself will enter the fire and die." Later, Krishna says, "Perhaps you shouldn't have taken such an oath." But Arjuna has given his word. Now, the word gets back to Jayadratha, and he's just absolutely terrified because Arjuna has sworn to kill him. And he knows he's a powerful warrior, but he doesn't think he's that powerful. And he wants to run away from the field. He doesn't want to stay there. He just wants to go back to his kingdom very far away and just escape from this. And Jayadratha's quality is the fear of death. So now he knows that his death is coming. And Duryodhana says, "You have nothing to fear." He said, "All of the great heroes, Drona and Karna and myself," and he names all the other, Aswatthama, who is the son of Drona, "we will all protect her. You will be safe." He said, "And besides, we will move you to the farthest perimeter of the battlefield." So they move him 12 miles back behind the lines. And they promise him that he'll be safe. And he's very uncertain, but he feels it would be cowardly. Duryodhana says it would be cowardly to flee. It would be an insult to my kingdom, and you must stay. So he agrees that he will stay. So it's the 14th day, and Arjuna has taken this vow, and he's determined. But everything in the Kaurava army, all the people in the Kaurava army are determined to stop him. So first he has to fight with Drona, and Drona is able to stand up to Arjuna, and Arjuna just can't get past Drona. And finally Krishna says, "Time is passing, you must go forward." So Arjuna puts down his weapons, and he drives the chariot around Drona, and he salutes him. He refuses to fight him, in other words, and just goes past. So Drona can't do anything about it. So then Yudhishthira, meanwhile, Arjuna has said to him, you know, he's commissioned Satyaki, who is a friend of Krishna's and a disciple of Arjuna and very powerful warrior, and Bhima to stay with Yudhishthira, because still Drona is still trying to capture Yudhishthira. And this vow of Arjuna is a very dangerous thing, because now Arjuna is going to have to leave Yudhishthira, and they know that he'll be gone all day. So Arjuna makes them promise, Satyaki and Bhima must stay with Yudhishthira. But Arjuna begins to make his way into the forces, and there's so many battles going on that Yudhishthira becomes nervous because he hears the conch of Krishna, but he doesn't hear the twang of Arjuna's bow. And finally he says to Satyaki, "You must go. You must go." And Satyaki says, "Arjuna has made me promise." And Yudhishthira says, "You must go. You must go and help him." So he goes in and he is waylaid. He's on his way to help Arjuna, and he's waylaid by a warrior named Boris Ravas. He's not important in himself, but he engages Satyaki in this battle. And Boris Ravas becomes very enraged. He represents the power of karma, and Satyaki represents devotion. Karma fights with devotion. And they fight together, and Boris Ravas has finally knocked Satyaki out, and meanwhile, Krishna keeps trying to get Arjuna's attention. Arjuna's engaged elsewhere, and Krishna says, Satyaki's having a lot of trouble over here. And Arjuna keeps fighting, and Krishna keeps saying, he's having a lot of trouble. And finally, Boris Ravas has knocked him out and has picked him up by the hair and has raised his arm, and he's about to cut Satyaki's head off. And Krishna says, you must do something about this. So Arjuna turns and he severs Boris Ravas's arm. Now, Boris Ravas is outraged. He said, I was engaged in another battle, and you cowardly, without even, challenging me in the proper way, just shot my arm off. He says, I refuse. And he said, and it was that Krishna person who urged you to do it, which in fact it was. Because this is Dwapara Yuga descending and Kali Yuga rising, and Krishna's telling people what is Dharma in this age. And so Boris Ravas says, I cannot participate in this battle anymore. And he sits down in a meditative pose. He's just going to drop out of it. And while Boris Ravas is having this argument with Krishna and Arjuna, Satyaki recovers himself, and he comes up behind him, and he cuts off Boris Ravas's head like that. And he's dead like that. And then again, Duryodhana and all his people say, what a dishonorable act! Satyaki he's associated with Krishna, and it's Krishna's leading everyone to these terrible things. And so then they all argue back, and was it so honorable when you were killing Abhimanyu when he was by himself and all your warriors came to him? And pretty soon you see all the anger and the hatred and everything of honor is disintegrating. And Arjuna said, I was pledged to help my friends. And Satyaki said, this is an ancient enmity and I did the right thing. I am not wrong for what I did. Meanwhile, time is passing. And Arjuna has made this vow. And they see that the sun is beginning to set. And finally, Arjuna makes it, with Krishna's help, these 12 miles back to where Jayadratha is, and Arjuna is finally going to do battle with him, and they fight, because Jayadratha is very powerful. And Arjuna, it just looks like he's not going to be able to succeed at that, and everyone is watching the sun, and suddenly darkness comes over the sun, and it seems completely dark. And Duryodhana's forces are thrilled, because Jayadratha is still alive, and Arjuna has not been able to keep his vow, and now he's going to have to kill himself. And Krishna whispers to Arjuna, shoot him now. And so Arjuna follows Krishna's word and he shoots Jayadratha, who has given up the battle because he thinks the sun has gone down. And as soon as he's shot, Krishna has darkened the sky. And the sun emerges again, and then the sun sinks. And Duryodhana, they all cry, how can you have done such a thing? It was so dishonorable. Jayadratha's his head is about to fall. Krishna says to Arjuna, quickly, quickly, he says, shoot your arrows and carry the head of that brave warrior off of the battlefield onto the lap of his father who is meditating in the forest not far from here. So Arjuna magically makes a chain of arrows and the head is carried and it falls on the lap of his father. And it turns out, you see, when this son was born, the prediction was made that he would die in battle. And the father said, whoever causes his head to fall in the battlefield, his own head will explode. So the head falls on the lap of the father. The father gets up from his meditation. The head of his own son rolls to the ground, and then they both die together. Now, passions are so great because not only have warriors killed warriors and Arjuna kept his vow and all of these things, but all these dishonorable things have been done by Krishna. He holds the sun in the sky. He makes them think it's sundown. Jayadratha puts down his weapons. He urges Arjuna. Everything is falling apart. So night is no obstacle. They begin to fight all night. Now Ghatachaka, he's so powerful because he's a Rakshasa, and Rakshasas have extra power at night. And so as the battle begins to rage at night, Ghatachaka can fly and he becomes very huge and he just begins to rain havoc down upon the Kaurava army. And Duryodhana and his brothers and Drona and Karna are just overwhelmed by this Rakshasa. And he also has the power of magic And he can confuse them, and he can make them not know who the enemy is, and he can make day seem like night and night seem like day, and it's just terrible. And the Kaurava army is just being destroyed because they've carried the battle into the night, and he has so much more power at night. And finally, Duryodhana says to Karna, you must do something. The whole army is going to be destroyed. You must kill this. Now Karna has this weapon which has enough power to kill Ghatachaka. It can kill him. This is a weapon that he won from Indra, but he won it from Indra reluctantly because Indra felt he had to give it to him because Karna had earned it by his tapasya. But so he gave it a condition. He said, you will only be able to use this weapon one time, and after that it will disappear and come back to me. And Karna answered at the time, that is not a problem because I have only one enemy I want to use it against. And so he'd been saving this weapon because he knew this weapon would be able to kill Arjuna. And now, Ghatachaka is wiping out the whole army. And he knows that unless he uses this weapon on Ghatachaka, it will all be over. So he realizes that he's powerless in front of fate, and he calls up the mantra and he uses the weapon, and the great Rakshasa is killed and falls to the ground. But even as he's dying, he makes his body as huge as possible, so he falls on many of the Kaurava soldiers and kills them as he dies. But Karna knows now that he has no chance against Arjuna. Then the next day, it's the 15th day, and Krishna says, Drona will never be defeated. Drona is so powerful. Past habit is so powerful that he continues to plow down all the Pandava forces. Isn't that so? We're fighting as hard as we can, and our samskaras just keep eating us up. And no matter how much we try to resist them, our habits just keep eating us up. So Drona has this force. And Krishna says, Drona will never be defeated unless a dharma is discarded. We cannot defeat him by honorable means. So he says, we must tell Drona that his son has been killed. If he thinks his son has died, he will lose heart for the battle. His son is Aswatthama, this powerful warrior named Aswatthama. So Bhima goes into the ranks of the elephants, and there's an elephant named Aswatthama. So Bhima smashes the elephant on the head with his mace, and the elephant dies. And then Bhima goes to Drona and said, Aswatthama is dead! And for a moment, Drona hesitates, and then he says, no one could kill my son. He's so powerful. And so Drona fights on, and he comes near where Yudhishthira is, and Krishna says, you must tell him. And Drona remembers this thought, and he says to Yudhishthira, does my son live? And Krishna says, you must speak this. And so Yudhishthira says, Aswatthama is dead. And then he says quietly, the elephant, Aswatthama. But they say in that moment that Yudhishthira had been so pure his whole life that his chariot never actually touched the ground. It was just 4 inches above the ground. And when he told this one lie, the first lie of his whole life, his chariot hit the ground. And from that point, it ran like everyone else. But Drona then became so despondent that again he put down his weapons and he was sitting in meditation. And at that moment, Drishtadyumna came. And this was his destined hour, and he cut off Drona's head, and then Drona was gone. So, now it's the 16th day of the war, and Karna is now made the commander-in-chief. And he fights furiously, and during the course of this day and the previous days, he one by one meets each of the 4 Pandava brothers. He meets Bhima, he meets Yudhishthira, Nakula, Sahadeva, and in each case, he mocks them, and he taunts them, and he masters them, and he has power over them. But in each case, he lets them go. A peculiar thing that's happening. Nobody quite understands. Why doesn't Karna take out his vengeance? He has the power to kill the Pandavas, but he doesn't do it. The desire for happiness in this world can overcome even our spiritual qualities. And then that night, he says, Duryodhana comes to him, and Duryodhana says, you must kill Arjuna. And Karna knows this is his last night. He knows that he won't win, but now is the time to face him. So the 17th day of the war, the next to the last day, happens. And Bhima has now been systematically killing all the brothers, and this is the day that he meets Dusasana. And Dusasana was the one who dragged Draupadi in by her hair. And Bhima had said, I will take your life on the battlefield, and I will drink the blood of your still beating heart. And so this day on the battlefield, Bhima comes to Dushasana and sees him and finally has his opportunity, and he fulfills his vow just as he said he would. First he cuts off the hand that touched her hair. Then he kills, he incapacitates him and breaks open his chest, and then he drinks the blood. And it's so horrible. Everybody on the battlefield just can hardly bear it. But Bhima is undeterred. He said, this is Dharma. This is the vow that I took. And right in this moment when everyone thinks things can't get any worse, Karna and Arjuna are facing one another. And even Ashwatthama says, maybe now, even now we can make peace. But Karna brushes him aside. And Duryodhana brushes him aside and the battle begins. Now Salya is driving the chariot just as Krishna predicted he would. And Salya begins to just make small comments like, what a powerful warrior Arjuna is. How great are his brothers. What a force of righteousness we see in front of us. Who could presume to meet such a warrior? And Karna knows what Salya is doing, and he says, I know that you have no love for me and that your heart is with the Pandavas. And again, Karna says, I simply go and do what I have sworn to do, even though I know I have no chance of victory. My only victory will be my good name. And so he goes forward. So they fight, and everyone stops to watch them fight. And they're back and forth, and the balance keeps shifting back and forth. And finally, Karna has this great weapon. He's going to hurl it at Krishna. And he's just getting ready to hurl it. And Krishna suddenly takes the chariot, and it's coming. And Krishna suddenly lowers the chariot down into the ground. And the weapon, which was aimed at his chest, which would have killed him, instead knocks the crown of Arjuna off his head. And when Karna sees that Krishna has saved Arjuna from this great weapon, again Karna knows that he has no hope. And they go back and forth and back and forth. And meanwhile, the whole time the battle is going on, slowly by slowly, the wheel of Karna's chariot is getting stuck into the ground. Because remember when he killed the Rishi's cow, the Rishi said to him, you will die in battle when you are helpless, just as this animal is helpless, because the wheel of your chariot is stuck in battle. And slowly by slowly it's getting stuck. And then Karna's becoming a little bit confused, and he can't quite remember. And he remembers the curse of his guru, when his guru discovered that he was not, in fact, a Brahmin, but a Kshatriya, and became so angry with him. When you are engaged in the most important battle of your life with the enemy that you are sworn to kill, you will not be able to remember the mantras. And Karna sees that this is beginning to fulfill itself. And so he gets out of his chariot and he begins to try to pull on the wheel. And while he's trying to pull the wheel up, Krishna says, now is the moment. And so Arjuna sends the arrow and Karna dies. Duryodhana is so grief-stricken now that Karna has been killed, that he can't bear it. This was his one true friend. And so all his brothers have been killed. He's the only one who's still alive. Dushasana, Bhima drank his blood, just like he said. And Duryodhana suddenly he can't bear it. And so he goes off to this lake. And he goes into the lake up to his neck, and he just needs to cool his body in this water. And so the Pandavas find him there, and they start taunting him and saying, you know, you brave warrior, look at you just sitting in the water. All of your people have been killed, and you have no courage. You've walked away from the battlefield. And Duryodhana says, I am a man of courage. I'm just taking a moment to cool my limbs. And he says, there's five of you and only one of me. It wouldn't be Dharma to fight with me. And they remind him of what happened with Abhimanyu. But Yudhishthira says, you're right, we are honorable. You may fight with any one of us you choose. And so he says, I will fight with Bhima. So of course, the two of them, who are both trained in the mace, they go to this great battle of the mace. And they're fighting and fighting, and neither can get the advantage. And Krishna then speaks to Arjuna and speaks of Bhima's oath to break the thighs of Duryodhana. So Bhima then picks up his mace and smashes Duryodhana in the legs, which is not an honorable act because it's a blow below the waist. But of course his legs are broken and he falls to the ground. And Duryodhana is completely angry, and he's angry with Krishna, and he says, you guided him to do something dishonorable. And then Duryodhana is full of bravado, and he says, I have lived a life that all men would envy. I've had wealth and power and pleasure that everyone would want. I have been a brave warrior. He said, I have lived the right life. And he said, you Pandavas have lived adharmic lives, and he lists all the things that they do. And he said, you incited Bhima to hit below the waist. You killed Bhishma by hiding behind the power of a woman. You killed Drona when he had given up his weapons and was sitting on the battlefield, not prepared to fight. You persuaded Karna to use his one weapon against Gadachoka, which he shouldn't have had to do. And you butchered Boris Ravis when he had his back turned. And you killed Karna when he was struggling with his chariot wheel. And you feigned darkness so that Arjuna would not have to break his oath. And so Duryodhana on his deathbed is railing away. And he says, by contrast, I have lived an honorable life. Such is the power of delusion. Krishna defends himself by saying, the power of darkness is too great. Dwapara Yuga is over. The only way darkness can be defeated now is by using a little bit of darkness to defeat it. And so this is Krishna announcing to all that the golden age has passed. So Duryodhana dies. And now, Duryodhana is just mortally wounded, hasn't died yet. And there's only a few warriors left on the Kaurava side. Ashwatthama, the son of Drona, and Kritavarma and Kripacharya, their elder warriors. Ashwatthama hears about Duryodhana being mortally wounded and the unfair way that he was killed, and darkness comes. And they're sitting under a tree, and Ashwatthama is just going over in his mind how unfair this is. And the battle is now over. The Pandavas have withdrawn to their camp. There's very little joy, but at least it's now over. And Ashwatthama is sitting there, and he sees a crow in its nest, and darkness had come. And he sees that an owl, under the cover of darkness, is able to decimate that little nest of the crows up there. And Ashwatthama conceives of this very evil idea. And he presents it to his companions. And he said, let us go under the cover of darkness into the camp where the Pandavas are, and we can slay them even as they sleep. And in this way, we can please our commander and our king, Duryodhana. And the others at first are horrified by this evil suggestion. But Ashwatthama is determined that this is what he's going to do. And so he heads out to do it, and the others say, well, if you're so determined, then we'll go with you. And thus, bad companions can draw you into things that you really ought not to do. And so they go into the camp of the Pandavas. And he kills Drishtadyumna and other of the great heroes who've made it through the war. And when the Pandavas realize what has happened, they are so enraged. Ashwatthama goes to Duryodhana and tells them what he has done. And Duryodhana is pleased with his action and then dies content. But Yudhishthira is furious, and Ashwatthama realizes the fury of the Pandavas is after him, and he runs away and he hides behind a blade of grass. He makes himself very small. But Yudhishthira finds him, and he has this jewel on his forehead, and he rips the jewel from his forehead, taking his power away from him. But Yudhishthira also curses Ashwatthama, that he will live forever friendless and alone for this terrible deed that he has done. And so they say that Ashwatthama still lives friendless and alone. So now they go back to Hastinapura. And they go to Kunti and they go to Dhritarashtra and they realize that the battle is over. And Kunti is there. And they're performing all the funeral rites that have to be performed, and everything is done. Kunti says, there is one more hero that we have to honor. And Yudhishthira says, who could that be? And Kunti tells the story of Karna, and that he is really the brother of the Pandavas. And the Pandavas are beside themselves with grief. They can hardly believe. And Yudhishthira turns to his mother and he says, this tragedy happened because you kept this secret from this day forward. No woman will be able to keep a secret. And Yudhishthira remembers that in that terrible dice game, when they were in the hall there and Draupadi was being insulted and everything was in such despair and he was just gazing at the ground, he happened to glance at Karna's feet, and they reminded him strangely of his mother. And that remembrance calmed him in that moment, and he'd always puzzled how the feet of Karna could remind him of his mother. And so now that he hears this, he understands. And Yudhisthira is so distraught that he just wants to go to the forest. He doesn't want to have anything to do with the kingdom that he's won. But Krishna comes and says, you know, this is the fate of a kshatriya. You must do battle and then you must rule. You cannot become tired of this world and not take up your responsibilities. So 36 years pass, and the Pandavas rule beautifully. There was one small part in here I forgot to say, which is just a little bit. When Ashwatthama was cornered behind the blade of grass and he saw the Pandavas coming, he sent out this powerful mantra which was going to kill all the remaining Pandavas, and they were able to stop it, but it went toward Abhimanyu's wife who had a child in her womb. And only because Krishna intervened was that one heir to the Pandava throne saved. So that becomes, they have one heir left because, you know, Draupadi, it's too late for them to make more sons, and everybody has been wiped out except the one son of Abhimanyu. He's the only one who lives. So 36 years passed, and finally the Yudhisthira and the others decide they've just simply had enough. They can't bear it anymore. Kunti and Dhritarashtra have long since gone to the forest and have also died. And now they put this remaining grandson on the throne. Parikshit is his name, unfortunately. And they put him on the throne, and he becomes the king. In fact, it's interesting. I was listening to David Frawley, the astrologer, talk to Swami Kriyananda, because there's a great misunderstanding in India. According to Sri Yukteswar, they believe that it's still Kali Yuga descending. And David Frawley traces that to the time when Yudhisthira and all his counselors left, and there was nobody who understood left. Yudhisthira and everyone who understood the true procession of the Yugas left the kingdom, and nobody wise enough to understand was still there. And so that's when the misunderstanding, because it was Kali Yuga descending. And so it was time for all the Pandavas to go because their age was over. So they, meanwhile, also Krishna and his people have been cursed and had a great conflagration in which they all turned upon one another, and their lives also passed. So Krishna is also gone. So there's really nothing left for him to live for. So Yudhisthira and his brothers start the long walk to the Himalayas, the five brothers and Draupadi. And they start walking toward the high mountains. And the first to pass away is Draupadi. And Bhima asks, why did she die? She was so good. And he says, her one fault was that she preferred Arjuna. Of the five husbands where she needed to be impartial, she preferred him. And then Sahadev falls. And so now 36 years have passed. I left out a little part. I'll just say it in here. You know, at the end of the battle, Bhishma was still alive, remember? And so there's a point at which Yudhisthira and the others go to Bhishma, and he's lying on his bed of arrows. And Yudhisthira asks Bhishma, tell me how to be a king. And Bhishma gives a long dissertation on the duties of a king. And it's a beautiful treatise on how to be a leader, you know, and what is required and what the duties are. And it becomes the sort of the canon of how one should live. And then Bhishma gives up and dies, and they do the funeral for Bhishma, and after the ashes are burned, and they're on the banks of a river where the cremation grounds are, and before they can gather up the ashes to toss them in the river, who is his mother, changes her course and comes and gets the ashes and takes them by the water of her own, takes her son away. So now the years have passed, and Krishna's own people, no one could destroy Krishna's people because they were so powerful, but there was a curse offered against them also. And they, at a certain point, turn upon one another, and in a frenzy of sort of madness, they all destroy each other. And Krishna knows it's time also for him to die, and he wanders off into the forest. And a hunter, he lies down, and a hunter mistakes his foot for the part of an animal and shoots Krishna in the foot. And the only place where he's vulnerable is in the sole of his foot, so the arrow goes in. And when the hunter sees what he has done, he's horrified, but Krishna says, no, the body has to have an excuse to go. my time is done. I have done everything I came to do. And so Krishna dies. And of course, now Krishna is gone, and the Pandavas have seen no reason whatsoever to stay. So the five brothers and their wife, Draupadi, head off to the mountains, and they're just going to walk until they die. And the first to die is the wife, Draupadi, and Bhima asks, why did she die? Yudhishthira says she fell because she had a preference for Arjuna. She was not completely impartial in her love for her husbands. Then Sahadev falls, and he says, Yudhishthira said, his fault was that he had pride in his wisdom. And then Nakula falls, and Yudhishthira says he was too proud of his handsome nature and his beauty. And then Arjuna falls. Bhima says, what fault could Arjuna have? And he said he boasted a little too much. He said that he could kill all the enemies all by himself, and in that way he insulted his brothers and the other heroes. And finally, Bhima falls. And Bhima says, why, my dear brother, am I passing? Why can't I walk into the heavenly realms? And Yudhishthira says, because you also were a boaster and because of your excessive appetite. Now, ever since they started this trek into the mountains, this little dog has been following them the whole distance. And now Yudhishthira is alone. His brothers have died. His wife has died. His parents, his mother has gone. Krishna has gone. He's just alone. He continues to walk up into the Himalayas, and this little dog is his only companion now. And finally, Indra comes in a chariot and is wanting to take him to the heavenly realms and says, you know, you alone are pure enough to enter the heavenly realms in your physical body. Swamiji describes this as, that's really saying that you can die consciously without losing consciousness, because you can't really take a physical body into a non-physical world. But that's saying that there's no break in your consciousness. You can move from one world to the next. So Indra wants to take Yudhishthira into his chariot. He said, I'll take you to the heavenly realms. And Yudhishthira gets in and the dog starts to hop in. And Indra said, we can't take the dog. This is a dog. You know, this is a very great honor that's being bestowed upon you. Don't you understand, Yudhishthira? Even your brothers, even your beloved wife could not come. But Yudhishthira says, but this dog has been relying upon me. And it's the duty of a king to take care of those who depend upon him. And he is my sole companion. And Yudhishthira answers back, when even my brothers and my wife could not come with me, this dog came. And he begins to get out of the chariot. He says, if the dog can't come, then I can't either. And then the dog turns into the Lord of Dharma, his father, and says, Yudhishthira, you surpass whatever test we put before you. You meet it and surpass it. And so then they go up to the heavenly realms, and they get to this beautifully exquisite heavenly place. And there, who do they find but Duryodhana enshrined? And Yudhishthira begins to look around. He doesn't see Arjuna or Bhima or Nakula or Sahadev. Or his wife, he doesn't see any of them there. And he says, I don't want to stay here. And the angel Narada is now escorting him. And he says, I don't want to stay here. Where are my brothers? And he says, oh, this is the heavenly realms. You know, everything is different here. He said, Yudhishthira says, there's Duryodhana and my brothers are not here. Narada says, it's all different here. The rules are all different. Yudhishthira says, take me to my brothers. And so Narada says, all right. And they begin this walk, and they walk, and they walk, and they walk. And the more they walk, the darker it gets, and just more, less beautiful, and gradually it becomes very foul, and it begins to smell, and it gets very dark, and they can hardly see their way, and they keep walking, and they keep walking. And then, all of a sudden, Yudhishthira can't bear it. He can't go any farther. He says, Narada, I can't continue. And in that moment, he hears the voice, and he hears the voice of Arjuna, and then Bhima, then Nakula, and Sahadev, and they say, oh, brother, is that you? Our misery is lessened just by having you near us. Oh, what bliss to have you here in this terrible place. And Yudhishthira says, I will stay here. So Narada leaves him, and Yudhishthira is just in this awful darkness, and all he hears is the moaning of his brothers, and for 1 hour he stays there. And then suddenly Narada comes and swoops him up into the heavenly realms again. And there all his brothers are enshrined on their golden thrones. And again, Narada says, you have passed every test that has been offered to you. And then he says, all kings must spend at least an hour in hell. Because in the course of their ruling, they inevitably commit at least some sins. But then they were allowed to have the fruit of all their great austerity and live in the realm of the gods forever. Okay.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Isn't that a great story? You're applauding the epic. Isn't it fantastic? You can see why all these centuries Vyasa knew what he was doing in giving that to us, huh? All these centuries it's kept the culture of India alive. Just the telling and retelling of that story. Isn't it so? We have fun even with our Indian friends. They will make a point by reminding you what happened to Yudhishthira at that time. What happened to Arjuna. Oh, you saw what happened to Bhima. Just like it was yesterday. Because it just stays in your mind always as the personification of right action and the consequences of wrong action. So, bless you all.